Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
It isn't an easy task.
Courtney Ellis on Focus on the Family Minute, explaining why it's difficult for kids to let go of some things.
Because it's not just about possessions. Every possession has memories that are attached to it, feelings that are attached to it, nostalgia that's attached to it. One of the hardest moments was we had moved from Wisconsin to California into this tiny condo, and we brought this table that my parents had gifted to us. This was my childhood table. It had a little bit of
24?
Yes, it expanded. It literally could seat 18 people, and we were in a tiny condo. So it was in our dining room, and it was in our living room. And people kept asking, are you going to host a banquet? And I said, no, I just can't part with it. I feel so guilty. My mom gave this to me. I moved it from Wisconsin to California. And finally, I realized, okay, I have to let this table go. It's ridiculous. Like, we can't walk in our own home because of this table.
More from Courtney Ellis at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Hello from the Groves on 41, where olive oil is our favorite subject.
Yes, and we are seeing an increasing awareness of the health benefits of olive oil, not just for your heart, but your brain and your skin, too. I'm drinking it. Consuming more olive oil is easy with our crazy flavors, like cinnamon, raspberry, rosemary, and more. You could have olive oil for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert.
Schedule a tasting and tour at the Groves on 41 or visit us at a farmer's market Saturday mornings in Templeton, Tuesday mornings in Paso. And want to learn more? Go to thegrovesonforty1.com.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. It's the youngster's first protracted time away from home, his first real solo flight from the nest, and he is writing his parents for money. A predictable phenomenon, a stand-up comedy cliche, but sometimes it's not funny. Sometimes the situation gets out of hand. It did with young Leonard. Leonard's mother was just about as concerned as a mother could be. Her son was becoming a deadbeat. Overreacting on her part? Well, let's look at the facts. Her son was not yet 20, away at school. The boy continually wrote to his father for money. Leonard might not have minded so much had his son succeeded academically, but Leonard was a goof-off in school, and Dad did mind. His father once wrote, if you were a millionaire, you could not be more extravagant. And indeed, Leonard owed more money to more people than his father could ever have imagined. Well, next the young man was packed off to a military school. Now his studies improved, but then, as before, Leonard discovered numerous ways in which to get himself into debt. Hoping you will send me some money for my immediate needs, he wrote to his mother. And in various letters, the same request was variously phrased. We should mention at this point that Leonard's parents had financial problems of their own. They simply could not afford their son's frivolous spending. The year Leonard actually joined the army and went overseas, his father died. You'd think the young man's heightened responsibility and personal family tragedy would have sobered him up, but nothing of the kind. Instead, from his mother, he requested a larger allowance. He needed some new tailored clothing, he said. He needed a polo pony, he said. Though already mother was sending every penny that she could spare. So Leonard borrowed again, from everyone it seemed. And he borrowed with very little hope of repaying. When he could borrow no more, he began to write checks, and the checks began to bounce. Now Leonard's mother began to panic. Now, for the first time, she realized the extent of her son's indebtedness, that if he were to return home now, a multitude of creditors would swarm and perhaps prosecute. So now he could not return home. Now mother is alone, and in no financial position to help him. She was hurt, bewildered, and ashamed. Most of all, she was afraid. Surely this young man's chronically irresponsible attitude would lead his life to ruin. Surely his deadbeat reputation would spread until nobody who knew him would trust him. That's what his mother feared. But do you suppose that deep down inside, she also had enough faith in her son to know that somehow, someday, he would outgrow his thoughtlessness and perhaps even achieve greatness? Or was that just too much to hope for a perplexed and perplexing rubber check writing 23-year-old with his head in the clouds, Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill? Ultimately, Sir Winston Churchill. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Tomorrow, Eric Gorham will be filling in. They're going to be talking about human trafficking. Today, I have Ian Parkinson on the show, and we are primarily talking about a lot of the misinformation and things that are going on at the jail. And before the break, we had started talking about what is going on at the jail, and they have protesters that show up on a regular basis almost every day. They sit down in their cars. I've sent people over to take pictures probably 4 or 5 times, and they've been confronted. They get out of their cars and, why are you here? What are you doing? They did, though, have a issue inside the jail, and I would like you to explain that. This was probably about 3 weeks ago, I would think. And there was video out about it. It was pretty ugly, but could you describe what happened?
Yeah, essentially, ICE has the right to be in the lobby just like anybody else. Protesters have the right to be in the lobby like anybody else. And this particular day, they had obviously seen through the fingerprint system, booking log, something that somebody that they were interested in detaining, because they had their name, their fingerprints, and everything else already. And that they were probably getting released in the morning like our normal practice is. And they were there. There was a very improper greeting going on from the protesters, yelling and screaming at the ICE agents, waiting for the release door to come open or this person to come, which sometimes can take hour or 2 hours. They didn't know when this person's coming because we can't communicate. And very disruptive. And I had mentioned that I have two civilian employees that they don't get paid to do that and have to hear, you know, cussing and screaming when they're trying to do their job. Their job is very paper intensive. So, long story, the second individual that they were trying to get started to come out. They identified themselves, and he tried to retreat back into the jail, and they went after him to grab him. Obviously, there was somewhat of a scuffle. My deputies intervened and stopped it, asked ICE to step out of the secure area, and they took the person back in, because our job is to keep the peace. And when we cannot lawfully turn somebody over, we're not going to, and we weren't going to, but they saw a problem. So two problems. The demeanor of the protesters and the disturbance they're creating, and the reaction of the arrestee not wanting to go with ICE, we intervened, kept the peace, as we do. As a result, I put out, posted in the lobbies that conduct is not acceptable and will not be tolerated. I will side with the protection of my employees and the protection of the public. Those must be peaceful. They cannot be disturbing to conduct of a public lobby. And we will warn, and if they don't cease, They'll be asked to leave. If they don't leave, then they're subject to arrest. So I made it really clear I'm not going to tolerate that kind of behavior in the facility. That's why people that we can release to ICE, because they don't qualify under 54, they don't get released in that location. They get released in the secure portion of the Sally Port to ICE because they're lawfully being turned over. People that just simply are released that do not qualify under 54 for being turned over, they're released like everybody else. But the conduct is what is not acceptable. You can stand there with signs, you can protest, but when you're screaming and yelling and chanting and using obscenities, it's disruptive and it's not going to be tolerated. So we put a stop to it. Fortunately, to the most part, we've seen a behavior change. I think it's been made very clear that I'm not going to allow that to happen and nor subject my employees to that. So a step forward, but I want to mention something real quick because we've been talking a lot about the jail, and that's primarily, where all the issues come from on the release of the jail. But we have a lot of people in our community that are documented, that are here legally. And this rhetoric that's out there, this misinformation that's out there constantly that ICE is in town when they're not, ICE is taking people that are legally here and shipping them out, those stories take a life of their own, and they scare our population that don't know if they're not true. And so two things as a result. Number one, they're afraid of any contact with law enforcement because they're afraid they're going to get arrested. Two, if they're the victim of a crime, we want them to call us. We have a duty, a right, or a responsibility to protect them. And if they're afraid that if we come to their house because they've been victimized, that we are going to detain, question them for their legal status, and we will not. We want those people reporting crimes. We want to protect them. And unfortunately, this misinformation and rhetoric out there is even affecting our population that is here legally. And that's a shame, and it's not what I want. It's not what most people want. We are a country of immigrants, but lawful immigrants. And with the change in D.C., the closing of the border, we have millions of people that were let in that have a very violent criminal past and have committed crimes. And the simplest way to avoid it is, A, go through the system legally, and number two, if you are here, do not commit crimes.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Ian Parkinson today?
Thank you, Karen, and this is a subject that I've been involved in for 35 years, and it's very frustrating to see this nonsense going on, even in our jails now. Two things, SB 54 as well as 287G. I know there's a conflict now because of our sanctuary policies, and I know it's being litigated now in the state of California because there's lawsuits related to that, because there are those of us who believe that we should be working with federal law enforcement to implement immigration law. But what disturbs me is the fact that these people went into a county lockup, acted out, and were involved in preventing law enforcement from conducting their duties, and there was nothing that was done to them. They were not arrested. Now, if I were to do something like that out on the streets, involve myself in disrupting law enforcement from conducting their job, I'd be arrested.
Yeah.
And I do not understand for the life of me why this was tolerated and allowed to happen without any repercussions to the people who disrupted what was going on in that jail. It just seems like it's out of control, and I'm very frustrated that occurred.
I share your frustration. However, I'll just point this out. If my deputies had arrested somebody then, and we weren't on solid ground as far as what the penal code authorized to do, because it is a public lobby, I would have been headlines of every news story locally, how bad my deputies were. I agree the behavior is unacceptable. That's why I made it perfectly clear that we've validated the fact that that 602, that trespassing section, did apply, and we could take immediate action. We posted signs, and that behavior is not tolerated anymore. But unfortunately, that was a free one to them, and I'm not going to allow that to occur again, because you're absolutely right.
But Sheriff Parkinson, if that would have happened to an average person like me, for example, because to some people I'm probably hated because of my position on holding criminal aliens accountable and deporting them out of our country and removing them from our midst, because we have enough of our own knuckleheads, we don't need to import them. And for somebody like me who would be soundly dealt with by law enforcement, probably because I injected myself in a law enforcement activity, which I never would. But the bottom line is this is totally wrong, and I think those people need to be held accountable, and they're not being, and that sends a message to the rest of the public that, oh, well, it depends on what side of the fence you're standing on as to whether or not we're going to enforce our laws.
Yeah. No, I have to disagree with you on that point. I think you make a valid point, and I understand the frustration because I share your frustration. However, the law requires that we tell the people when they conduct themselves like that, they have to leave. They have to refuse to leave to be arrested. The yelling itself only constitutes us being able to have them leave a public location like that, the lobby. So it would have, no matter who it was doing the yelling, in that case, deputies would have said, stop or immediately leave. And if they refuse, then they can be arrested. And that's pretty much across the board on all trespassing cases, and there are some exceptions, but I agree with you in the sense that it's not proper, but the message has been sent. The message has been sent out there and made perfectly clear that that's not going to be tolerated. So there was a free one. I give you that, but it wasn't because we didn't want to take action. It was, we needed to make sure that our action was lawful and we were prepared to take action. And now that has all changed. So we're in a completely different position now than we were at that moment. And I think the message has been delivered because the behavior has changed. And if it doesn't, we have a protocol and a procedure, and we will continue to take immediate action.
Thank you very much for calling.
Karen, just one final thing.
Okay.
If he could comment on 287G and SB 54, 287G, if he could explain that to the public so that we can educate the public as to what's occurring and the sanctuary policies in California, that it does not hold true to every sheriff in the county and the counties of the state of California, that there is a disagreement as to how we should be moving forward with that with our federal partners.
Thank you very much. I'll have him do that after I get you off the air.
Well, I'll mention, you know, I mean, there's a couple things that have changed, and I'll tell you, the interpretation is shared by 58 sheriffs in California. So if somebody is deviating from that, I've never heard that from them because I meet with them every other month, and everybody is following essentially the same rules. There's a lot of nuances. There's, you know, we still have a requirement to issue U visas. When you talk about 2AG and the cooperation, I have Homeland Security agents on my task force, but they do not work immigration side of immigration. They work criminal side only, and that is permitted under SB 54. The other interesting thing that you made me think about that I think is important, SB 54 did not apply to prisons. So if somebody was convicted and sent to a state prison, obviously they've been convicted of a felony, and a serious felony if you're going to prison. It did not apply to prisons turning people over to ICE. But interesting thing I found out a few months ago, the Secretary of Prisons works for the governor. They have a rule that they cannot turn people over to ICE on state property. So even though 54 doesn't apply, they can. I think it was purposely left out of 54 because the most general public would say, wait a minute, somebody's in prison and you won't turn them over and you'll just release them back into the public when they're here illegally. I think it was purposely left out to avoid the backlash from the public, and instead they did it by directive to the wardens of the prisons in California. And it's wrong, because anybody should see that if they've been to prison, it's a pretty serious crime. And they have not, you know, complied, or they're not obligated to comply with that SB 54. But if your boss says no, they mean no. And they are at, they are an employee that's at will, and appointed by the governor, the wardens of the prisons.
I do notice that one of the things that the protesters often say, they've committed no crimes. Over and over again, they claim every single one of these people that's being arrested, even with warrants, they've committed no crimes. But one of the things I'm going to ask you, when you go to do an arrest, especially, for example, a meth house or a murderer, and you're trying to go in quietly, and if they come and blow whistles and obstruct at some point and yell for warrants and get in the way, my fear is that eventually a law enforcement officer is going to be injured. If you warn a murderer, they're trying to arrest him, it's going to be, I would say it's a more dangerous situation. Remember the guy that was shot in SLO when he shot outside his door? I think it's much better for you if you go in quietly.
Oh, and in many cases, you're absolutely right. You don't want to pre-warn somebody. And it's very, very dangerous to put law enforcement in jeopardy. And regardless of whether you feel it's right, it's the law. Contact Washington, D.C. and change the law.
We're going to take a break from our break with our sponsors and be back with more with Ian Parkinson.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages losing steam in the final hour of trading and finishing mixed, with the Dow snapping its three-session winning streak and slipping from record territory. Healthcare and tech gained while industrials and financials lagged as investors digested the latest labor market reports. Shares of memory chip makers that had surged during the previous session, like SanDisk, Western Digital, and Seagate Technology, all declined. Shares of biotech company Ventech surged for a second day, rising 36%. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Eli Lilly is in advanced talks to buy the company for over $1 billion. Shares of Lilly rose nearly 4%. The Dow winners, Amgen, Salesforce, and Microsoft. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow down 466 points. The Nasdaq higher by 37. S&P 500 down 24. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky. Invested in you.
If you're over 40 and plan to retire someday, the window to protect what you've built may be smaller than you realize. As retirement moves from someday to on the horizon, protecting what you've built becomes just as important as growing it. And that's where Noble Gold Investments comes in. They help investors reduce risk by adding gold and silver to their portfolios. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com, NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. and the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
Attention all computer users. Tired of the hassle of transferring your data to a new computer? Knowledge Computers, your local computer repair experts, are here to help. With 17 years of experience, they know how important it is to keep your data safe and secure. That's why they offer a seamless data transfer service that will transfer your entire Windows operating system to a new computer. Call Knowledge Computers today to take the hassle out of your computer upgrade. 805-226-5200. Knowledge Computers, locals helping locals.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley. I'm your host on Wednesdays and Thursdays. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There's no paywall. And today I have Sheriff Ian Parkinson. We're talking about some of the issues that are going on with ICE. And, you know, there are some nonprofits that are doing alert systems, and they send out alerts primarily in Spanish telling people, They're abducting people off the street. They're kidnapping people. Stay in your homes. Don't go to work. They're in Paso Robles today. We remember that happened about a week ago. And when that happened, I am aware that there was an email sent to the city. City council received an email that these were warranted. They had warrants. I literally went out and looked, and I saw a car that belonged to ATF. ATF is not ICE. If you have ATF at an arrest, they are not there because this person is an illegal immigrant. That is a definite sign that there is a serious crime involved with this arrest. But regardless, they blow whistles, they do things. Could they be charged with obstructing justice if they are either with ICE or even with your officers, as they're now going to some of your arrests trying to warn the suspects? At some point, could that actually be obstruction of justice?
It could be. Typically, the way the courts see that now is there has to be a physical obstruction. For example, if you tried to run up in between the person being arrested and the agent or officer or deputy. But typically, it's not verbal, and even though you mentioned last time or before this last break, it's extremely dangerous for everybody. I think it's really not a smart thing to do. But the problem is as people get more emotional and they start doing things that are, you know, one step further, I think you're going to see more people charged with impeding a federal officer. I think the rules for federal law are probably very similar to what California law is that it's going to require some form of physical, you know, blockage, standing in front of a car that's trying to drive down the street and blocking it from moving. Things like that are absolutely interfering. You know, most of the time we've seen them on TV, it's at large gatherings and it's practically impossible safety-wise to get out and arrest that person. But in some cases you are. I hate to see it get that way. People have the right to express themselves. They have a right to have an opinion. But they don't know the facts. And you and I have spoken, you know, earlier about this. There was just a shooting in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and the mayor stepped forward. The police chief of Minneapolis stepped forward and basically said the officers were wrong. The governor put out an X tweet saying that they were wrong, don't believe it. But we'll do an investigation. Well, that's, as I mentioned, that's the cart before the horse. The investigation is supposed to prove the facts, not your opinion or your one piece of information. I've been to enough shootings and seen, until all the facts are in, you can't make a decision. Nobody, and I really mean this, nobody should want law enforcement jumping to a conclusion without facts. But the rhetoric from elected people to decide they're going to get involved because they've seen a snippet of something and throw something out that the shooting was unlawful and it was murder or it was wrong or anything else without knowing the facts is absolutely ridiculous. It's unsafe. It's wrong. It's not fair. And there is no value in doing an investigation if you've already concluded that. That's not what an investigation is. An investigation is to get the facts. And then you conclude at the end of collecting all the information. And those things don't come quickly. I mean, I've had enough, you know, shootings that we know that until we get all the facts, we have an idea of what occurred. But you're missing a whole lot of information that can change that. And until all that information is at your fingertips and you've reviewed it, not, well, I heard this. Now, the governor, the mayor, the police chief has convinced people that want to believe that it was unlawful, believe it's unlawful based on what they said when they don't know anything. It's totally irresponsible. And it's sad that people keep spreading these rumors when they have nothing factually to base it on.
The misinformation on this case is stunning. First of all, some of the stories say it was a white car. Other stories say it's a maroon car. Some stories say it was an undocumented immigrant. Other stories say it was a protester in the car. Some of the stories say the protester was blocking the agents. They got out of their car and told them, get out of your car, and got in front and behind. And they went, I'm not kidding, this is how it said, they went a tiny bit back and a tiny bit forward, and then they shot and killed her. Others said that the agents got stuck and got out of their car, and then the person was headed at an agent, going to injure an agent, and they shot and killed the person. You don't know what's happening.
You know what? You just did a great illustration of why it's so bad to jump to a conclusion. I don't know what happened. If somebody asked me right now, if you just said, hey, what do you think happened? I'd tell you, I don't know. I'm not privy to all those facts, nor would I pass judgment whether it was right or wrong. Get the facts when you know the facts, and you can say, I base it on this. But it's so wrong, and people are so anxious to jump to conclusions. It's convincing people that what has occurred is wrong. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But I guarantee nobody knows at this point. They are collecting facts. And once they get the facts, they will draw a conclusion. And I can tell you in California, and I don't know how it works federally, if law enforcement shoots somebody and kills them, an investigation is done, and the DA's office, the sitting DA, makes the decision whether or not it was justifiable homicide, because it is a homicide. It's the taking of another's life. But justified homicide is lawful because of protection of yourself or others. But the DA is the one who reviews all the information. They don't get to make the decision that night. They get all the reports. They get all the video. They get everything that possibly was discovered. Witnesses that were either, you know, didn't believe the officer or believed the officer, whatever it was, it doesn't matter. They get it all, and they make a conclusion a decision as to whether or not it was justifiable. So that comes way down the road, because until you get all those facts, it can take days, could take months, could take all kinds of things. We don't know, was the driver intoxicated or under the influence of something, and it was a dreadful mistake on their part because of their level of intoxication. We don't know anything about that. There's so many things we don't know that have to be put together. And unfortunately, we're in that world of, you know, hey, they can't arrest that person without a warrant. Not true. You can do whatever you want to interfere. Can't do. Well, guess what? California passed a law that said you have to wear a mask, or you can't wear a mask unless it's in your policy. Arrest these federal agents. We can't. They are the supreme law of the land. We have no authority over their policies, their procedures. Whether you like it or not, that's the law of the land. California, they can dictate to us by law what we can and cannot do. And I guarantee you, every single policy that local law enforcement has throughout the state is going to have exceptions for wearing masks. COVID comes back, you got to wear a mask. Remember, we were forced to wear masks. Your working a critical scene at night with an armed gunman, and you put a mask on to conceal your skin color to be dark with your surroundings because you don't want to be spotted. There's all kinds of reasons, but my point is everybody goes down this road of, well, I heard it, so it must be true. Remember the old commercial? There used to be a commercial, I heard it on the internet, so it must be true. That's what is going on in many people's mind. They think because they read it, because they heard it, it's the truth. And it's never fully accurate unless you can view all the documents. If all these documents got released today of what happened, meaning the video, reports, everything, eyewitnesses, all that, and you got to read it all, you personally can make a conclusion. That's when you have all the facts and you're drawing a conclusion from it.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Ian today?
Hey, good afternoon. Ian, it's Mark Lisa calling you from the Verdant Fields of Retirement. How you doing, buddy?
You're such a good guy. Now you're rubbing it in, aren't you, Mark? Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I got to say, probably the majority of our county stands with you. I always do and will continue to do so. It's like I said, with regard to the shooting in Minneapolis, it's like I've always said, and I said it during COVID, too. What's the first casualty of war or the first casualty of a crisis? It's the truth.
Yeah.
And when these politicians can do their performative politics based on what they think popular opinion is or what's going to get them reelected or go along with the crowd, they're going to say and do anything. Why? Because our 24-hour, 365 access to the news means the news cycles are very short. We don't hold our elected officials accountable for telling the truth. We only want to hear what our dopamine rush gets us, whether it's a five-second reel on Instagram or a short clip on YouTube or a soundbite that sounds really good because it's my side and not your side. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, you know, you're right.
I stand by you, Ian. I know a lot of other folks do as well.
Thanks, Mark. I actually feel very supported. I understand the emotion side of this, but you know, you bring up the excellent point. You want the facts to fit your narrative if you've made your mind up, and so you manipulate those facts. You also come from a very aligned occupation where, you know, things are done or were done. Now that you're retired, you don't have to think about them too much anymore. That people accuse a healthcare professional of doing something wrong, and you're in the same spot. You have to get all the facts before you can make any conclusion as to was anything done wrong, because opinion doesn't do it. Opinion doesn't convict people, and opinion should never convict people. So you get it, Mark. I know you've seen it. You've experienced it just in a slightly different way than I do. But you definitely
understand.
My team
and I got called every name in the book during COVID from both sides.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what do? You put your head down. You do the best you can with the rules given to you, and it's all about who you're trying to protect or save or et cetera. So, you know, my friend, you're a good leader, Ian, and you'll always have my vote. And if there was some sort of deputized armed militia that could come to your assistance, I would gladly be in the field to be with you.
You'll be the first to get called, Mark. Hey, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate hearing your voice. And I hope you enjoy retirement, and I get to see you again sometime soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm loving every minute of it, my friend. Take care, Ian.
All right.
Thank you for calling. It is. I think the bulk of the public is on your side. I think part of the problem, though, is there's a large amount of the immigrant population that doesn't speak English well. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and they get these cards that said, you don't have to open your window. They're abducting people off the street. They're kidnapping people. They can disappear you and you'll never be seen again. And then I've had several people call me and say, you know, they arrested a grandmother. They arrested a mother. That person was a mother. They're not allowed to arrest mothers. The misinformation is causing fear.
Right. No, I agree with you. the fact is, you know, law enforcement arrests people every day, and the same narrative could be misrepresented to the public about us. You're arresting people and you don't have a warrant. You're taking them from your families. Yeah, the suspect is doing that, not us.
We're going to take another break from our sponsors and be back with more with Ian Parkinson.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect, and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finished work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner-broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Bealey, your host on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And today I have Slo County Sheriff Ian Parkinson on the show. And I'm going to veer away from immigration for a minute. We're having our last segment, so if you do want to call in, 238-5775. And Ian, I saw the news that the court now says that the idea that you can have open carry only in counties with under 200,000 residents was not a legal law. And what is going on, and what are you doing after that ruling came out?
Yeah, so obviously in California, we always have new laws. And in this particular case, this was changed a number of years back, I think. It was challenged, and the U.S. Ninth Circuit came out with a ruling. I think it was a three-panel committee, two judges against one. And I'm not even sure that one was against it, other than the population numbers didn't feel was something that was legal and violation of the Constitution. But basically they said, no, it's unconstitutional what you're doing, the making a law like that. So where we're at right now is that I'm sure it's immediately being appealed. I'm sure it'll be a very short period of time before it's put on hold, and until it gets probably adjudicated up to the U.S. Supreme Court is my guess. So it wouldn't preclude, if it was lawful to carry a unconcealed firearm, there would be locations that are still prohibited, like schools and other places. But right now it's kind of a big wait and see what the courts do, rather than change a lot, because the Bruin decision made by the U.S. Supreme Court basically changed the laws on concealed weapon for the nation, but in particular California, where it's a shall issue, and there has to be a reason to deny somebody. So it's changed.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Ian today?
Ian, I'm just kind of curious as to the fires that demolished that building in Templeton. I know that they incarcerated some juveniles. I'm just wondering why nothing has been done about it. And is this going to be just like all the other incidents that just kind of say, well, you know, they're youth, so we have to be considerate of that? And I think that what that does, it just perpetuates more juvenile delinquent behavior. And I was just asking, what are we doing about this?
Yeah, so first of all, that was absolutely tragic. Beautiful landmark, iconic landmark, and senselessly destroyed on purpose. Case was investigated and is at the DA's office for prosecution. What happens, I don't know. There's liability on the parents' ends when you're a juvenile. Responsibility, I hate to be a pessimist, but we've been living in a state of nobody takes responsibility and holds people accountable for quite a while with many of our laws. But in this particular case, it's a pretty public crime, and I'm sure the DA will do everything he can to hold them accountable. But juvenile law is a very tricky one, and you see a lot of juveniles do get that slap on the wrist. But in this case, I don't know. I think they deserve to be held accountable. The question is, you know, what is that? What does that mean? What does that look like? And in most cases, if it's adult crime, I could give you an idea of what they're looking at. But juvenile, there's so many things they can do to divert them from the justice system. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, it's not going to bring back that, you know, that iconic building. And unfortunately, the owners have been victimized by kids that didn't make a mistake. They did something awful, unlawful, and absolutely wrong.
On purpose.
And, yeah, it's bad. So we'll have to wait and see. They can't share the names, but I think you'll hear from the DA's office down the road what the punishment was for their behavior.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. And these things take a while. The cases don't end. This happened July 4th. And I think it probably took months to identify the suspects.
Yes.
So we're not even close at this point.
Well, we've done all of our investigation and given it to the DA's office. I think that I'm fairly confident in, you know, my knowledge of the investigation that we've proved it. The question is what does the court system do, and what can they do to the juveniles as far as punishment? It doesn't preclude the owners from filing civil lawsuits against the parents because you're responsible for your child. But the money's not going to get the building back. It's going to relieve the owners of a costly burden that, you know, that they bore, and the loss of, you know, obviously business. You know, you can't just replace a building, and even if they could build it the same way, it wouldn't be the same, you know, in many cases. But I'm hoping that there's some form of justice. But what that looks like, I don't know. I think that's a question that you know, the DA would have to weigh in on what possibly could happen, and then ultimately what the juvenile court is going to do.
How many children in the end did you recommend charges for?
I think there was two, but I'm not positive if others that were present did not. There weren't recommended charges on them too for being there. I mean, it really takes one to do it, but if you know, the others could have some responsibility as well. So I don't know the answer whether or not others were chargeable, meaning that there was evidence to say that they participated in a way. Was this, you know, planned? I don't know the answer to that.
And so two of them did plan to do it.
I believe they did. Yeah, I believe two of them were filed on, charges were filed.
And were the kids pretty honest when you asked?
Well, I guess my short answer would be no. honesty is means you come forward and say, I did this on accident. I didn't mean to do this, and I'm sorry immediately. Not having, you know, law enforcement have to, you know, prove and find out who you are and do it. I mean, people make mistakes and they regret their mistakes. And I think when somebody makes a mistake and they step forward and say, I just made an awful mistake. And I'm willing to take the consequences for my mistake. To me, that's honesty. When you're, you know, concealing the fact that you did it, I don't think that's being honest, regardless of what you eventually say when you get caught. You know, it's saying, well, I'm not going to be honest unless I get caught. So, I don't look at it that way. When we have to prove it, and we have a pretty extensive investigation to get to that point, it doesn't show honesty to me.
And one of the things I want to ask also, regarding, we had the new laws go in about a year ago, more than a year ago now, actually, regarding theft and increased penalties. Have you noticed a decrease in theft after the new laws?
Yes, I think we're seeing a decrease in theft primarily because there are now consequences for those actions. And after three times, they can be charged as a felony. I think the other important thing is that, one, I think the resealing of our border has curbed the ingress of fentanyl and drugs into the country, which has helped reduce some of our overdose numbers. But also we brought back, you know, after being convicted of multiple times, just like theft of multiple times, you can be charged with a felony with drugs. And I think that's good because we have a drug epidemic that's gotten worse because we dismissed it, and it's not helping the person that's addicted, because there is no stick to enforce any type of enforcement, and so I think that's been really really bad. I think it's been a bad thing, and I think now what we're seeing is this change in there's consequences again, and albeit I think I wish we would have gone back to you know that the statutes prior, but I think the reasoning was if we try, it would fail in California. But as you know, that passed by 70% of the vote because people are tired of it.
And I didn't realize the overdose numbers. They are, I've watched YouTube videos interviewing cartel members who say the money in drugs is down, but it's nice to know the overdoses are down.
Yeah.
Ian, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And Eric Gorin will be here tomorrow, and he will be discussing human trafficking.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.